Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
And welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head-to-head to see which one does it better. And welcome to part two of this week's Avenging Altercation. So, on Monday's episode, things got pretty dark as we travelled back to 1990 for Sam Raimi's Darkman. But today, things get even darker still as we take a look at a film that has the tragic legacy of its leading man being accidentally killed during filming. It's a shadow that looms large over director Alex Proyas's gothic superhero story. From 1994, we're talking about The Crow. At the end of this episode, we'll have a winner, but which film will it be? Darkman or The Crow? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken!
Hello, Clash Butters. Our friend T-Bird won't be joining us this evening on account of a slight case of death. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilley.
So don't forget, very quickly, you can follow us on Twitter at ClashPod for all sorts of extras about each show we do, plus the clues to help guess every forthcoming episode are on there. And also, if you want a bit of a longer chat, we are on email, show@clashpod.com. And please, just while I remember, because I always do it at the end of the show, and then someone said, do it at the start of the show, because it maybe more people will do it. But I don't know, I'm not telling you what to do. If you could rate and review us and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify or other, it is hugely appreciated. So, as I said, part two of this week's Avenging Altercation. These were my choices. Darkman versus The Crow. And I'll remind you of the connection. Why make a superhero costume when there's plenty of great options in the bin? That's the basic one. you didn't get wed, and now you're dead. That's option two. And the final option, and my favourite option, dear listeners, superheroes who won't go out without their face on.
Yeah.
So Monday, Chris took us through Darkman, and today, Victoria is going to attempt to take us through The Crow without crying. how are you feeling about this journey we're about to embark on, Victoria?
Really excited, really emotional, quite aroused. Yeah, the big three for me.
Those are her big three. Those are her big three. Thankfully, still in third place is aroused, but you know, over the course of the next hour, dear listeners, it could climb. It could climb the table.
It will.
And when we hit number one for arousal, you'll know about it. So we do it chronologically, as you know. Obviously, it's The Crow today. Victoria, if you are ready, please take us on a journey.
Oh, God. Okay. Beautiful, dead rocker Eric Draven crawls out of his grave 1 year after a brutal gang attack which took his life and that of his beautiful fiancée. To kill their killers, he becomes the Crow, an unstoppable avenging force with the face of a clown, a guitar and quite a few snappy one-liners. Tracking down the gang on Devil's Night in Detroit, he picks them off one by one, pausing every now and then to smash out a metal riff and ruminate on just how perfect and beautiful him and his girlfriend were. With a sideline in saving street-smart kids and squeezing heroin out of the world's saddest barmaid, who's also beautiful in a kind of damaged way, he crosses paths with ultimate boss Top Dollar, who's in a sort of hilarious, incestuous, bloodlust eye cult with his beautiful half-sister, before taking him down to then be reunited with Shelley, who is so beautiful, she's now a literal angel.
Pretty beautiful, then.
They're so beautiful.
Beautiful, yeah. An eye cult. If you say it, it becomes a thing.
Carina! 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 Carina!
Devil's Night is upon us again. A little party, start a bunch of fires, make a little profit.
Someone's dead. You can't come back, can we?
That's what I thought. Are you referring to anyone in particular?
You know, my daddy used to say, every man's got a devil. You can't rest till you find him.
Winked at me before he jumped out a fourth-floor window like he had wings.
Is his link between the land of the living and the realm of the dead.
So kill the Crow.
Caw! Caw! Bang! I'm dead!
I banished the devil's death. I felt how awful goodness is. I felt how awful goodness is.
So let's just get this covered off. I don't really care what you when you saw it or whatever, but please tell me.
I watched this at the time because we didn't get many superhero movies. It was quite a big deal when one came along. I watched it, but then because of what happened, the sort of circumstance around it, I didn't really ever feel like watching it again because it seemed like quite a morose thing to want to watch it again. Or I was uncomfortable with the fact that you never quite knew when it was him and when it wasn't, and that felt quite ghoulish to me. So while I watched it and thought it was great, I haven't seen it again until this week.
Okay, what about you?
I got into massive trouble for the one and only time I played truant at school, which was to watch a pirate VHS of
really?
The Crow. Yeah. On Friday afternoon, we had, even though we were in year 10, so we were 15 years old, for some fucking reason, we had double PE on Friday afternoon. And apparently, if you just... because you could pick what sport you wanted to do, that made double PE an attractive concept. It didn't to us.
Yep.
What was a pirate copy of The Crow on VHS. So without really thinking it through and how obvious it might be that an entire group of friends would all not be at PE that day,
we all walked to my friend Dan's house and watched The Crow. And we got a little bit high. And I don't really remember watching it because we found it absolutely hilarious, being 15 and a little bit high, to take the tagline, darker than the bat, The Crow, and just replace The Crow with various other things. And I swear to God, to this day, it was like people would go, darker than the bat, The Pineapple.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Or darker than the bat, The Fridge Freezer.
Yeah.
And the entire movie was spent coming up with variations on that theme. So I don't remember a lot of it, but a bit
it's
like
what the
Chris,
filmmakers wanted, I believe.
A bit like Chris, I do remember the reason we actually had this pirate VHS, which for the record wasn't something we did a lot, but it was because there was this mystique about this movie. We'd heard the stories. We knew that Brandon Lee had died during filming, and there was this confusion. Like, now you don't think twice about a studio filmmakers being able to put a deceased actor back into a movie with the technology we have now. But back then, it was so confusing to go, he died before they finished, but they finished the movie? Yeah. How does it work? What bits is it? And there was talk, like Chris said, about which bits were him and which bits weren't, and the bit running across the rooftop, and apparently that wasn't him. And so you did spend a lot of time watching this film trying to work out what was Brandon Lee and what wasn't. And I hate to say it, I still did the same again rewatching it this week. Mm. And this is what I mean when I say the shadow of his death looms so large over this movie for various reasons.
Okay, I mean, it didn't for me. So I've seen this film fucking loads of times. But I didn't see it till I was working as a waitress in
a cocktail bar,
a Victorian themed tea room / piano cafe.
She's not going to get a job in a cocktail bar.
Shut up!
You want what? A Long Island? What are you talking? A pint? You can have a pint.
No, I'm offended. So when I was working in the Victorian themed tea room / piano cafe. So this is like 96, 97. I was 15. And there was a goth girl who did the washing up, and she was really ice cool and really self-assured, and I really wanted her to like me.
You've told us, long-time listeners will know that you've told us about this girl before who you thought didn't like you, and then suddenly you became inseparable.
Yeah, because of The Crow.
Right.
So she lent it to me because she was like, you'll really like this. And I thought that was, and I wanted to impress her. So I took it home and then I watched it and I was like, oh, I fucking love this. I love it so much. And then watched it 1,000 times and then gave her the VHS back. She didn't, we didn't obsess about Brandon Lee's death in it. And I don't think that was, it wasn't the draw, which
what
is
was?
An awful thing to say. The story, the intensity of the love affair, if you're 15 and there comes along a story about it. I just feel like such a twat, but like if two people are meant to be together, nothing can keep them apart. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like to me, that was everything. That was big.
Okay. So this isn't a leading question. I'm just interested. So that was 15-year-old you watching that. And I can kind of get that.
Yep.
What was your reaction though to watching it now as a not 15-year-old woman?
I nearly put it on again immediately because I loved it so much and love it so much.
For the same reason?
Yeah, basically because it's like a time machine for me, this film. Like it awoke that part of my brain that was like, that values those things and wants those things and always wanted those things, of course. And it's just, and he played the fucking guitar. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, I know that bit.
I mean, everyone has a little bit of not everyone. I had a particular weakness, like a lot of people did, for someone in a band. Like, that makes a lot of sense. There's the reason he's a musician.
As someone who was in a band in my teenage years, yes, people did obsess about us.
I mean, I was in a band also, so it's like...
Me too.
Playing air guitar with your hockey stick is not in a band.
But also, Ruth, who lends it to me, she then lent me the soundtrack, and then I didn't like the soundtrack that much. It's not the music. I like the music, but I wasn't like, oh, this is, you know, the full package.
I will find you the photo so you can put it up on Twitter. I have dressed as The Crow 3 times for Halloween.
You dress as The Crow all the bloody time.
I can do a good crow.
I bet you can.
But also, you know, Undying Love with a fucking hot dude, let's be clear. Mm. And also it's got Ernie Hudson in it. So a big tick for me already. And then, and Michael Wincott. I loved Michael Wincott because of Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Yeah. And he's fucking amazing in this. And then I spent a whole summer working in this stupid cafe just going, I like the pretty lights. And we would crack up. We were like, we're so fucking cool. We've got this secret joke. And then I didn't watch it for years and years because I just didn't. And then watching it in the week, I was like, I could just get so obsessed with it.
You know my feelings on Michael Wincott. I'm a huge Michael Wincott fan. We've had this conversation about why is Michael Wincott not in more stuff because he's fucking brilliant.
Right. Yeah.
Alien Resurrection is ruined by the fact he dies too early. Michael Wincott is great. I appreciate the Wincott love. And Ernie Hudson, yeah, it's Ernie Hudson.
He's a class act, isn't it? He's good.
He's not Congo Ernie Hudson, but he's good.
I think he's better than Congo Ernie Hudson.
That's Ernie Hudson. Ernie Hudson's favourite role of his own is Congo.
Sure. It belongs to me, this film, so I decide. So let's do some background. This was a script by John Shirley and David Scout based on a comic by James R. Barr. So it's all awful. When James R. Barr was a teenager, his girlfriend was killed by a drink driver. And as a way of dealing with that, he needed a creative outlet. And so he created a comic book series, The Crow, and apparently took a little bit of further inspiration from the real life account of a murder of a young couple over like a cheap engagement ring. All awful. Directed by Alex Proyas, who was known for music videos at that point. Produced by legendary producer Ed Pressman, who now enters the Clash Pod Hall of Fame for... What do you want to guess?
I'll let you tell us, Chris.
I don't know. He did RoboCop and Starship Troopers, but we haven't done them. What else has he done?
Street Fighter, American Psycho, this.
Nice.
Welcome to the Hall of Fame, Ed. I'm sure it's everything. Mm. So, but let's clear this off. So it stars Brandon Lee, son of Bruce. He beat Christian Slater to the role. John Bon Jovi was mentioned because Eric Draven is a musician. So it kind of makes sense that you might look to a musician. But he was cast because he had the right acting chops for it, but also the physicality. And this would have been his breakthrough role because he's fucking amazing in it. But as everybody knows, there's a few days left to film. And he was accidentally wounded by a defective blank and then he died in hospital and he was 28 and it's fucking awful. And that was going to be kind of that, but Miramax came up with $8 million and with the support of Brandon Lee's mum and his fiance, Alex Proyas completed the film using very early CGI to put Brandon Lee's face onto his stunt double. And there are a few that you can see the join sometimes, but I think, like you say, it's ghoulish really to focus on it. And there was the wholesale removal of a character called Skull Cowboy because the scenes that were left to film were quite intense, sort of two shots. And it was felt that the CGI just wouldn't work for those scenes. So the Skull Cowboy had to go. But we'll pick that up a little bit later on. Mm-hmm. A modest hit, but obviously a massive life on video and then DVD. Although, Chris, you've got a DVD and you said it's shit.
There's a good interview which I'll talk about in a minute on there, but it's not a great DVD.
Yeah,
but it's yours now.
Thank you. but it is widely regarded as an amazing performance from Brandon Lee, so we should just talk about it
Very quickly. Just before I forget, and before we get too deep into your passion for this movie, obviously Ernie Hudson is in this. I've mentioned Congo. another great performance in Congo alongside Ernie Hudson comes from Tim Curry as Herkimer Homolka. And that is this week's obligatory Tim Curry reference. Done.
Just while listeners are skipping through that bit, can I have a spare piece of paper because I need to make a fan and I don't want to leave the room.
Yeah, of course.
We're both your fans.
Also, apologies to long-time listeners. I did forget to do a Tim Curry reference on last week's
Massive
episode.
Massive apologies.
Yeah. I don't want you to think I'm sitting here letting things go. It was just last week, and I'm sorry. But
you have to tweet one out.
We're back in the game. Back in the game.
I just want to briefly talk about James O'Barr. So there's a half-hour interview with him on the disc, which is he's an intense guy. He's quite agitated in this, but he talks about that story. He was working at a carship dealership during the day and drawing all night, and it took him 8 years to write The Crow.
Yeah.
Dealing with this pain, he said it was just a horrible, horrible experience. He listened to Joy Division every night. That's what influenced the writing. And it was based on the face of goth rock singer Pete Murphy. Do you know him?
No.
From Bauhaus. And Iggy Pop's body and physicality, which is what Brandon Lee was going for. He had to lose some weight to play the role.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to tell you, Vicky, is that he said that while they were developing it as a film, he met with the producer who suggested, dead seriously, Julian Temple directing a musical version of The Crow.
Yeah, okay.
That's fine. Starring Michael Jackson.
Whoa! No! That's not my teenage fantasy at all.
That could have happened.
No thanks.
That could have happened.
You don't know what it might have turned out like.
That's true.
We could be sitting here and you could be gushing about Michael Jackson.
Don't say gushing. I'll say it, you can't say it.
I can't say gushing. Has gushing been taken away from us?
It depends what sort you mean.
I mean, effusing.
Don't she's effusive all over that show.
And now we've hit it.
I don't mind that. It's weird, isn't it? You never know where you are. But I don't mind that.
It keeps us on our toes.
Yeah.
But Brandon Lee's stunt double, do you know him? You might have met him.
I do. Chad Stahelski.
Chad Stahelski, who directed John Wick and made John Wick.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm.
Really? I mean, the makeup. I thought the makeup was a Piero. I don't know this for a fact. That's just what I assumed when I watched it. You know, the Commedia dell'arte.
He did not say that in this interview when he was describing where all the ideas come from. What he did say is that that's what The Crow was based on, those two rock singers. And Shelley was literally a translation of Beverly, his girlfriend who died. Like, that's exactly what she looked like, is how she's portrayed in the comics.
Yeah, that's heavy.
Yeah, he said it was every night of those 8 years writing this comic was incredibly depressing.
Ish.
But he felt like he had to do it.
And while we're on the subject of the tragedy, I don't think we need to go into it here, but it is a perfect storm of bad luck that led to Brandon Lee being killed on set with various different types of bullets being used for various different types of effects. And one got lodged in the barrel, and because the firearms handler had left for the day, the person who was left in charge of the guns hadn't realised that you were meant to check the barrel, and though a blank was fired, it did launch an empty cartridge at Brandon Lee, which is how it happened. But again, you can read the full details.
Yeah, and we should just clear off, it's not in the film, obviously. The footage was seized, it's evidence, it's not in the film. So you might not, you know, when you're 15, you're probably watching it thinking it is. And I think a lot of people think it's the big shootout at the end.
Yes.
But it isn't.
I did. That's what we all thought when I was watching.
But then also, because to do a scene like that where he's shot at like a million times and nothing goes wrong, and then
it's strange though, because you do that was the rumor. It was like he jumps on the table and when he falls back in that scene, that is the moment. But no, that's not true.
So should we go through it?
Aye.
Okay, cool. So welcome to Grim City. See what I did there. A sort of very stylized graphic novel style world. Now we've got a voiceover. Normally fucking hate voiceovers. Don't mind this one.
Yeah, a lot of narration at the start of this.
Just don't mind it. I get to decide. Don't mind it.
Kind of establishing the world and the rules of the world.
Yeah,
which
but
is
super quick. Okay. And it's Devil's fucking night. And poor Shelley's got a shitty landlord.
Did you know what Devil's Night was before this? I'd never heard of Devil's Night.
Well, it was in Gross Point Blank.
Thank you. That was like the film we did last week. Was the first time I heard reference to it. And then I watched this and I was like, right, so this is a thing then in America. This is a real
thing.
It's
specific to Detroit.
Okay, so Devil's Night is the night before Halloween.
Yeah.
Where people burn stuff.
Shit.
Right.
Yeah.
What's the night up north? I learned about it from Shameless, where everyone goes crazy around Halloween and
Friday.
it's got a very specific name.
Thank you.
It's something night, like Devil's Night, where everyone's allowed to go out and cause trouble, basically.
No.
Mischief Night.
Mischief Night.
I thought so.
They made a movie about it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right, so Devil's Night is like Mischief Night, except more fires.
Again, you really need to define is allowed to go out. It's not like The Purge.
That is allowed, yeah. Do your worst.
Expected to go out.
People do go out. People go, it's what fucking night? Mischief Night, right then.
Right. Let's have it.
The government doesn't go, for one night of the year, we allow the North to go fucking mental.
So, yeah, Shelley and Eric, her lovely fiancé, are killed by a gang of right wrongans because they mourned about being evicted. So they both die. And we meet Ernie Hudson, Officer Albrecht, but let's come back to him. 1 year later, it's Devil's Night again, and because...
More narration, so we've got more
voiceover. Yeah, more voiceovers. Love it, yeah. Like, again, super,
great voiceover,
really
apparently.
Efficient.
Explaining
yeah.
what's happening.
It's the just best the best voiceover.
Because two people who were meant to be together Nothing can keep them apart. Okay, so Eric crawls out of his grave, not a mark on him, gets some shoes from a bin and goes home for a brutal reenactment of his own murder and Shelley's rape and murder. Very, very nasty business.
It is, and I will say this at this point, I did love, at this point, but we will come back to it, at this point, I loved how quickly it got into shit. I love the fact, you know, you are less than, I think, about 5 minutes in when he's crawled out of his grave and is already on the path of vengeance. Yeah. There ain't a whole lot of what went before. And at this point, I'm like, oh, great. That's what I'm here to see. I want to see this guy take down those motherfuckers.
And he gets his makeup, which is very important.
He paints his face. While the Cure is singing about painting your face, it's all very on the nose.
Great, great. Why not?
I'm feeling that great is going to be something.
You don't keep qualifying everything.
It's difficult because I can't analyse it too deeply to give you a good reason other than it's just great though, isn't it?
There's a shot here that Alex Proyce himself said he doesn't like. It's great.
It's wrong. You're wrong. And all the flashbacks, like. I think the thing I have matured in myself about are the flashbacks when I was 15. So there's one where you're establishing just what a fucking great couple Eric and Shelley were and how fucking in love they were. And so they're not dead in this flashback, obviously. And she burns the dinner. Shelley, what are you fucking like?
Are you about to say this bit is great, great?
No,
I'm
not.
It's not.
It's not. I know it's not.
I'm just telling you right now, this is like route one fucking flashbacks. I mean, they have a fucking shaving foam fight.
They do.
A shaving foam fight.
And she has a pillow fight, which no girl has ever done ever. But if you watch tell, if you're an alien that landed, you think that all girls do is throw fucking pillows at each other.
It's just the bit where she burns dinner and he goes, guess we're going out for dinner.
We're going
you're,
to
like,
a
restaurant. You're like, no, 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 no.
Yeah, but then when I was 15, I was like, one day someone will love me enough to forgive me burning the dinner. Although I probably wouldn't burn it, but let's go to a restaurant. But now I'm like, okay.
It still might happen if I ever burnt a dinner.
If I ever made anything, then maybe I'd burn it. And they're still doing it. They just love each other so much. Okay, I've made that point. Anyway,
yeah, I'm just to add a bit of parity to this. There's sickeningly sweet flashbacks,
yeah,
and unnecessarily sweet.
And he proposes, and they live in a wooden structure of some sort. Well, it's the loft, isn't it? He stuffs the loft full of candles, and she's not immediately like, "That's dangerous." She's like, "Yes," presumably. So now we're establishing he's the crow. He's fucking invincible because he cuts his hand on a bit of glass and it heals up. So he's like, "Fuck this! I'm going to go and put right some wrongs." So then we've got to pick off the gang one by one. We're starting with Tintin after the crow does this amazing dead drop from a window into a bin again, which is a bit of a shame that he lands in a bin again.
Well,
but you kind of have to, don't you?
This was before the DC Extended Universe where people always land in a crouched position on their fists.
Yeah. And unless it's going to be a mattress factory, it kind of has to be a bin. But it's a bit of a shame because then you just think, oh, rubbish, and then you hear, but whatever.
Yeah.
So he meets Tintin. We have a fight in a back alley. Eric almost loses the advantage because he's so intensely in love with Shelley that he cannot cope with Tintin winding him up about her horrible, horrible death. But obviously he wins and sticks Tintin full of knives.
Great line. Victims, aren't we all?
Lovely. Stab. Brilliant. Lovely. But I'm kind of racing through because I like that Tintin scene. I mean, I like everything about this film, but I want to meet Top Dollar, a.k.a. Michael Wincott, and his half-sister, Micah, a.k.a. Biling, and her lip liner, which actually should be credited separately because it's massive.
Yeah, it's not really lip liner. It's bottom half of the face liner. I mean, you know, as a child, she did not stay within the lines colouring in.
She didn't.
It's just all over the bottom half of her face.
I was saving that discussion for my change that I want to make to the film.
The lip liner.
Well, sack whoever was doing it.
I don't know. It's kind of works, but yeah. Anyway, they are the type of people that will have a threesome and then eat some eyes, which is great.
Yep. She asleep. Now dead.
It is confusing.
But they do.
Dead,
I mean,
isn't she?
I'm jumping around a bit. They've got like piles of coke that are like fucking mounds.
I've written a mountain in capitals.
Yeah. That's I was how trying much to think cocaine. Of something like is it like a loaf of bread? Like what is it equivalent to? It's just a lot of coke.
It's the Matterhorn.
It is. It's a lot of cocaine. And she doesn't like chairs. She prefers to lounge on a table.
She does. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is fine. It's fine. And he does say the wonderful line, which I went, Oh, God, actually, that's a really good line, which I'm not sure is in the graphic novel, but it might well be. Childhood's over from the moment you know you're going to die.
So true.
Fucking great line.
Yeah. And he's got a snow globe and says, Daddy gave me this. I mean, come on. Or father, whatever. Dark. Yeah. But brilliant.
Cheap. Wanted a PlayStation.
But
probably
cutting ahead,
like
they do give Michael Wincott, unless he just grabbed the best lines, and The Crow has some funny one-liners, but they're nothing compared to what Michael Wincott gets to say.
I like Michael Wincott. I don't like his hair, and I don't like the fact he's in riding boots.
Why?
I mean, it makes me... I want my villains to be kind of cool. Michael Wincott is cool in my book. I mean, perhaps not as Guy Gisborne, but certainly in Alien Resurrection, he's the coolest character. And in this, I just don't know. I don't like...
You didn't like Jack Burton in his sheepskin boots.
Yeah, but that's fair enough because they're awful.
Moccasins. They're moccasins. Also, I think it's because his hair is just... He wants some product on it. And that's it. It's too bouffant. It's just
He's got a layer of short hair and then the long hair sort of
an undercut.
In it. Yeah. And that does... He should just have long hair.
That said, in 1994, I had an undercut. So actually, it's fine.
So actually, it's fine. Yeah, good.
All right. Great. It's great.
It's great. So Eric goes to get his engagement ring from the pawn shop, which is like fair enough because they're not free. Burns that down, and then we start his friendship with Ernie Hudson, aka Officer Albrecht. The important part of which is that Ernie Hudson went to see Shelley in hospital because she clung on for 30 hours in so much pain. And Ernie Hudson has this as a memory which Eric takes off him, which will become very important later. Mm-hmm. Bit daft, but whatever.
Yep.
And now we're off to find the next gang member who's Fun Boy. Fun Boy, fucking Fun Boy.
Yeah, it's kind of his kind of fun isn't great, kids.
No. And he is.
What he does for fun is drugs.
He does loads of drugs with Darla. Darla is Sarah's mum. Sarah is the street smart kid. Actually, she's got an undercut, actually.
Sorry, just realised. And cocaine's bad too.
Oh, God.
There's a mountain of cocaine!
Yay!
But Fun Boy's
but don't
drugs...
do heroin.
Fun Boy's drugs are bad.
Now, this is what I was talking about when I said about the joins being evident with the sort of the CGI and the rewrites that were done just before the end of production. So, Skull Cowboy. Do you know about Skull Cowboy?
I'm hoping you're going to tell me.
Skull Cowboy is in the comics and is a sort of spirit guide, as well as the actual bird, the crow. So, but Skull Cowboy explains the rules to Eric about you're on a mission, you're on a quest, and if you deviate from that quest, you'll be punished. So, in this scene, when Eric does deviate from his mission, which is to kill the gang members, because he has a word with Darla, she gets a parenting lecture from him, even though he's a corpse. And actually child-free, which is taking the piss a little bit. Like, what do you fucking know about it? Nonetheless. So in that, he becomes less invincible and Fun Boy cuts his hands with razors. So you'll see later, Eric is wearing electrical tape on his fingers, but it isn't really explained why, apart from the fact it looks quite cool. Mm. And that's because he's got slashes on his hands.
Duct tape. That's what I use when I dress as the crow. I wrap my black sweatshirt in duct tape around my body to give myself that very svelte look that the crow has.
You are svelte. You didn't need to do that.
No, thanks very much. I read about this, and I don't know if you're talking about the same thing. I haven't read the graphic novel, but I read about the graphic novel in preparation, and apparently the crow hates it when, I don't know if it's the same thing as Skull Cowboy, but the description I read online was how the crow hates it when Eric starts moping about the flat, looking at old photos and stuff. It's like, get on with your mission to kill these people.
Because, jumping ahead slightly, which I know is what
Judge
I do.
Judge it, crows.
This was going to be a franchise. And then Alex Proyas wasn't keen after his leading man had passed away. But at the end, it was going to be set up that because Eric saves Sarah in the church, we'll get there, but the low point is actually not that great because he's sort of going to go back to the grave and then Sarah gets kidnapped by Michael Wincott and he goes to save her. At which point the Skull Cowboy says, you are now doomed to walk the earth forever, setting up the franchise.
Cool. I mean, one day I think we'll do a show where you don't do the end with about 40 minutes of film still to get through.
On that note, let's have a break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You just can't help yourself. You're excited. It's a big movie for you.
Are you giving me an actual note?
No,
because
no. He's sitting right there. If there was a note to be given, who'd be giving it to you?
And you've got to learn to take notes.
Oh, my God.
Oh, is this part of the show?
Carry on, Victoria.
Just give me a minute.
Yeah.
Right, okay, so now, don't stop looking at me. You're annoying me. So now we've got to kill T-Bird. And David Patrick Kelly in this scene is fucking amazing. Amazing. Mm. Yes? No?
Yeah,
yes.
No.
Face?
I thought it was interesting, the fact that Top Dollar in the graphic novel is a low-level person,
yeah,
and T-Bird is actually Michael Wincott's character, the top dog, but they swapped them around for some reason.
I think it's a mistake. I think you will come to it more towards the end. No, I always say that, and then I just do it, so I'm not going to even apologise. I'm just going to say, T-Bird should be killed after Skank. Who cares about Skank?
True.
And also, if Top Dollar is your big boss, then that's the person you're going for. But Eric doesn't really seem to be going for him. It's kind of a coincidence.
Yeah.
I reckon that's an error.
His right-hand man who's with him in the church. Oh, my God, I can't remember the actor's name. The guy who plays Candyman.
Tony Todd.
Tony Todd, thank you. Tony
is
Todd.
Is Grange in this? Or I can't remember.
I think he should maybe be off earlier in the T-Bird place, and then T-Bird, because T-Bird, like you say, is
brilliant.
A bloody great villain, and he should be there alongside Top Dollar in the church at the end as his right-hand man.
So Eric straps, T-Bird loves his car, it's called T-Bird, straps him to his car, but think about the acting from David Patrick Kelly. Think about the line. Say you saw this line in a script and it says, I know you, ... I knew you. Someone like me would go back through that and say, stop repeating the word no. Mm. But the way he delivers it, it's just great. And then there's some quotes from Paradise Lost, because why the fuck not at this point? So that's T-Bird gone. Top Dollar, he wants a big do for Devil's Night because it's got a bit corporate. but Eric's going to ruin it, kind of. And what happens is Michael Wincott's got like every bad guy in the city round a table to ostensibly talk to them about the corporate influence on Devil's Night. But obviously, it's really an excuse to get a lot of people in a room.
Isn't this strange?
Why, what?
His motivation. I'm unclear. Yeah. Like, what his... He's running this club. He's clearly selling drugs in some kind, otherwise he just collects cocaine. And this planet's like... This city used to be scared of us. The fires used to be bigger. Make them bigger this year. We want bigger fires. It's like, what? It's not a business model. Why do you want fires?
He's delivering the Joker's speech, though, isn't he? He's saying we want disorder, chaos, anarchy. Now, that's fun.
Yeah.
So, but if he's a businessman, it doesn't really make sense, because the Joker is insane and he isn't doing anything for money, whereas this guy is running a business. He's called Top Dollar.
Yes.
And so, yeah, it didn't really make sense to me, even from the beginning, why he was doing certain...
Unless he owns water. Yeah.
What?
So he doesn't. What if he owned the water and then every time someone puts a fire out, there's like a little counting thing.
He should invest in the greeting cards he's so annoyed about. I want one of those Devil's Knights greeting cards.
Fucking greetings cards, yeah.
I thought he was going to say to the room full of bad guys, so to make a bigger splash, you should go out into other towns. That would be an easy fix. Like, call your henchmen, go out further.
And do what, though? Burn other towns? Yeah. For what reason?
Well, it's like Chris said, it doesn't make sense, because chaos, but then he is in business.
Yeah,
so.
He lives above a nightclub that he clearly runs.
He does run it. Maybe.
I love a movie where the crime boss lives in a big open plan office above the nightclub he runs, which you would never do. You'd live far away from that fucking noise.
Yes.
But because it's really cool to go upstairs where he works and lives.
I did want to ask you guys what you thought of that nightclub, because it just clubs like that make me laugh, like a woman singing as sparks fly above her because there's a bloke welding
yeah.
Like, I've never been to a nightclub that's had a welder in there, but films, there's a lot of them.
There is, isn't there?
Yeah. It's not a bad nightclub scene, because a lot of films, I think you can go through movies and you can judge the quality of a movie by how well they portray a nightclub scene, because it's one thing that so many films get wrong. There's either too much space between the dancers, it's too light. Like, to get a good nightclub scene, and I think it's not a bad one. I'll tell you who does nightclub scenes really well. Michael fucking Bay.
Michael Bay. I knew we were coming back to the
base. Yeah, he does. What was I going to say?
Brandon Lee turns up.
Well,
all the crime guys are sitting around the bloody table.
Just that cool thing of, like, I'm going to sit on the table rather than stand up. Mm-hmm. I'm going to hop onto the table. But then a mistake. Fine, can see Skank and says, I just want him. And it's like, it's like, who cares about him? Like, he's a good actor and he's a good character. But even in the brutal reenactment, he doesn't seem to have more to do with it than, he doesn't have more to do with it than T-Bird, who's the first person you see. So it's just a bit of a flaw in the pacing.
Well, no, he is involved in the rape and murder of Shelley. And that is the only thing Eric Draven is here to do, is to kill all of them. So even though he is, because of the way he's portrayed as a bit of an idiot, a lesser villain, he is still the last one on the list, which leads me on to my problem. At this point, Michael Wincott does not need to insert himself into this process. Eric Draven after him. Michael Wincott could easily step aside here and not be the final villain. And the fact that he is the final villain because he chooses to be the final villain and isn't on Eric Draven's hit list in the first place is a little bit...
Yeah, it's a mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe he wants Eric's lovely eyes.
Well, his half-sister has got her eye on them, hasn't she?
She definitely does.
There's some
pecking coming.
You can have his power. The power resides in the eyes. So true.
Didn't understand that, really. I didn't understand the bit where... So are we saying that if she got his eyes, they'd have the power?
Yeah, I think so.
The crow needs to write that down.
And she, because also, Eric can see through the crow's eyes.
Yes.
There's a lot of eye stuff that's not clear to me.
Mm. Yeah.
Ironic.
I couldn't see it.
That's better. So you work the joke.
Writing is rewriting.
Don't say it like that when it's true.
No, it's a good note. Thank you.
I think Vicky thought you said that because I did
Alex
your voice.
That. You didn't do my voice. That's not how I sound.
Writing is rewriting.
Anyway, Byling realises you kill the crow, you kill the man. So there's a little bit of tension or upping the stakes because it's like the jig is up a little bit. Like someone has realised where his power resides. Now, this is the bit that even with a million times of watching it, I can't quite forgive this. So Eric has completed his mission, effectively, and is going to go back to his grave and is sort of lying on the grave. Mm-hmm. But it's a happy moment in some ways because he's done what he came to do. But in terms of the structure, this really is the low point because after this, we're into an Act 3 action piece.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not much of a low point because he did everything. And it's telegraphed that it's meant to be sad because he sits on a rooftop, smashes out a riff.
My problem is something slightly different, which is that the movie starts on Devil's Night and there is clearly a dawn halfway through this movie. This movie does not take place over one night, and yet at the end, Top Dollar is still talking about it as though it's Devil's Night, despite the fact night has fallen and morning has broken, and no one goes, it's actually fucking Halloween. They still go, it's Devil's Night. It's like, oh, do you not remember when the alarm clock went off and it's a brand new fucking day? Yeah. So this movie doesn't, like, it's got its chronology wrong. Like, it actually pretends it's still Devil's Night the following day.
Okay, but it can't rain all the time. So that makes up for lots and lots and lots of things. It's so true.
You can't just say it can't rain all the time.
And do you know what? I'd forgotten about it can't rain all the time. And me and Ruth thought that was the most profound arousing thing in the world. And I'd forgotten all about it. And then the minute it started and they said it can't rain all the time, I was in bits at home, in pieces.
Why?
I don't know. I don't know.
It's like saying it's a bit hot today.
To be honest, I think... I don't know who the audience for the comic book was, but it hits a lot of emotional points for teenage girls. It just does. Right. Like,
it's because he's so beautiful and he looks so damn sexy and he's a tortured soul. And any 15-year-old girl worth their salt loves a tortured soul.
We do. Yeah. Why is that?
The comic was for goths and miserable teens.
I told you before about it, my theory. No, actually, that's not my theory. There's a brilliant podcast called Where Should We Begin? The theory about why girls like bad boys, right? Is because they when they come to you, they only want one thing, more or less. And so you can take care of your own needs because they've taken care of theirs. They don't need any mothering, nurturing, whatever. So when they come to you, you know what? You can look after yourself, take care of your own needs. But why do we like a tortured soul? Because it's a different thing, but it's like fucking catnip.
Surely it is.
Because you're weak.
Oh, is that it? No!
Is it not? I'm asking this as a question, not making a statement,
oh,
Victoria.
No. Uh-oh.
Is it not that's a maternal instinct in a woman where a guy, you go, I can fix him. Mm. And there is that sort of desire to go, because it's almost a test of your ability, maybe not even just as a mother, but as a human, to go, this guy's come to me, I think he's broken, I reckon it's a challenge, and I'm accepting it, I'll fix him.
My own... blind spot, but that's not sex. There's nothing to do with sex there, and that's an important part of this film for me at 15 and now. Because if you're mothering someone, you're not sleeping with them. So, and those emotions are completely separate, obviously.
Yeah.
So you cannot be sexually attracted to someone that you need to mother.
True.
Or not cannot, sorry, yeah. That's really strong. I don't think that's possible for me.
Yeah, so, no, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. Very confusing.
It is really confusing, but it's just the tortured soul thing is really alluring. It's very complicated.
But is it because he's a tortured soul in this, but there is... he's a tortured soul because he's in love with someone else, so you can observe without any desire to get involved with him, because the reason
that's
he's attractive is because he's tortured about his love for another woman. So you're merely a voyeur to his
that
soul.
Kind of works. And also, if you've ever been out with anyone who actually genuinely was tortured, that's fucking boring.
Oh my God. I mean, within the film, great.
Yeah.
If you met Eric Draven, you'd be like, oh my God.
Sort it out.
Have a drink.
I want to go to a restaurant, Eric.
Let's fucking watch a Pixar movie.
Get off me.
Finding Nemo is great. The mum dies in what scene?
Stop staring at me all the time. I don't like it. Anyway, so Sarah is kidnapped, taking us to the church. Two best lines in the film. Michael Wincott says, what's this an impression of or something? Cork or bang, fuck, I'm dead. Brilliant. And for a ghost, you bleed just fine, which is a fucking brilliant line. Because they kill the crow, kind of, but it comes back to life. And so Eric can be hurt. Ernie Hudson turns up to help, but gets shot more or less immediately, which I laughed at that this time round because it's almost comical. He's like, you stay behind me and you're whatever. And then it's like, bang, oh shit, that was useless.
Yeah. I don't know. I think you're giving a lot of lines a pass on this. I think
really?
Yeah, a little bit. I think you may.
And you seem to be adding swear words into lines that aren't there.
Am I?
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. Is that true?
I've got one of those written down.
Fucking rains all the fucking time.
Oh, I don't mean to. But what lines am I giving a pass to? You don't like for a ghost, you bleed just fine.
It's all right.
It's really.
Never mind. I think if you took that and put it in a different movie, you would not be sitting there going, it's brilliant. It's great.
Right.
Check that line.
Yeah,
I think it's all context because you love this movie.
Yeah. A fight on a rooftop, classic. And Eric kills Top Dollar. He then is sort of dead over a gargoyle and his blood runs through the gargoyle's mouth. That's awesome. Back to the grave. Here's Shelley. She's an angel. Done. Done.
Just to go back to
More narration and voice. We've got no voiceover. Just had enough of that.
Good, so good voiceover.
Sarah's back doing more.
Good voiceover. Good voiceover.
I know.
It's great. It's great. Now, the humour. There's a nice touch in that bit where for a ghost you bleed just fine, and the moment that Ernie Hudson, and it's the humour that really works for me in a lot of these moments in this movie, where Ernie Hudson goes, "I thought you were invincible," and Brandon Lee goes, "I was, I'm not anymore." And it's little touches like that, the little lightness in the dark that really help this movie and his performance.
Yep, I agree.
There's a podcast on the Nerdist Network about Bruce Lee, and they dedicated an episode to Brandon, and his sister Shannon hosted it, and she was saying that she's almost sad that this was his defining role because of what happy, fun dude he was in real life, and he's been remembered as this gothic, tragic, romantic character, whereas actually he was just a real laugh. And so I think a lot of those funny, lighter moments are him injecting himself into proceedings.
I do too, and I actually, on this watch through, that's what I took from it. What I took from it was an actor very much coming into their own and with a really deft comic touch as well. I thought it was great. Did you mention how fucking awesome Michael Wincott's death is, by the way? Fucking gargoyle through the mouth.
I just said it about 20 seconds ago, almost word for word what you just said.
Good.
It's fine if you're not listening. If there's somewhere else you'd rather be...
Wow.
Fine. Sorry. It's just, do you not think it's risky to say to me, I don't know if you've mentioned it.
Oh, that's why I'm checking, because I was obviously there's a lot of thoughts in my head.
All right, I don't want another Romeo and Michelle, guys. Come on.
Anyway, I don't have any more. That's it for me. So we can do the bits unless there's anything, or if Alex hasn't been listening and just wants to repeat some more stuff.
No, I was going to say there's a great bit where he goes, "For a ghost, you bleed just fine."
Oh, I love that.
I love that too.
That's a great line.
That's great.
It just needs a fuck in it and it would be perfect.
Fuck, for a ghost, you bleed just fine. Yeah, and that line, you could put that in any movie and it would be a great line. It's not in context.
But better if it's narration.
When I'd forgotten about the voiceover, and when it came, I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. Like, I'm going to have to defend it.
You came out all guns blazing, to be fair.
I know.
It's all good. We're all friends here.
So, is that it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so, Alex, what was your best scene?
Best scene is what I was just touching on, which is how funny Brandon Lee is in this movie. And it's at one moment, and I think it defines just the best elements of The Crow, which is why I don't watch this movie and go, it's a shame that he's remembered for such a tragic character. Obviously, it's a tragic story, but to take, I guess, part of like the story out of it and just look at his performance and what he was going to become, he was just so funny. And it's the moment where he's killed all the bad guys in the big shootout in Top Dollar's office, and the police have come in, and he's standing against the window, and the police officer goes, "Freeze!" And he just does this little jig.
He does, doesn't he? Just like
along the side of the windows.
It's so
it's
weird.
Like a musical number. It's like, and exit stage left.
Yeah.
And he does just this jig, almost jazz hands off to the side. And I was like, that's fucking brilliant. He's brilliant. And I know that's him who's gone, that's how I'm going to leave this scene. And it's the best. And that's why it's such a tragedy. Because to add that element of humour to such a morose movie at times is the perfect, perfect thing to do.
What about you?
I liked, and it's only brief, maybe I could have done with more of it, but that final showdown on the roof in the rain, I just loved the aesthetic of it. I thought it looked awesome. I think it sums up what's so cool about the film is that look, and so I like that.
I like the shootout in Top Dollar's little bijou apartment above his scary nightclub. I just think it's amazing.
It's a cool shootout.
Yeah.
It is a cool shootout, and, you know, people talk about it being a forerunner to The Matrix in terms of the style, and I agree. Or at least John Wick.
Your most valuable whatever, Chris.
Are you going to go for Michael Wincott?
I'm not going to go for Michael Wincott. Do you want to go for Michael Wincott?
We've talked to him a lot. I'm going to go for the cinematographer and the production designer because, again, I'll say that I feel like the visuals are the key to this film. And I've written down their names. Darius Wolski and Alex McDowell. I think they did an amazing job. So you could say I'm again picking the colours.
Mine's Brandon Lee. My MV, whatever, is Brandon Lee. I think he's great. And I think, obviously, it's a shame that this is his final movie, because there are glimpses here of what a fantastic actor he was going to become. So Brandon Lee.
Okay, that's fair. Mine is Michael Wincott. I think it's a class performance.
Agreed, yep.
One change, Alex?
I wanted to see... You know, I said at the start, I love how quickly it gets into it. I think I wanted to see a little more of their real life, the relationship between him and Shelley.
I just remember that they run through a field together.
I can imagine. Is there a scene?
And he lifts her in the air like, Shelley!
So there you go.
What else could we add to that? What are the other classic cliches? She burns the dinner because she's a ditz. Mm. They have meaningful sex where they look in each other's eyes constantly. Weird.
Splashing water. I guess we've got that with shaving foam, but yeah, maybe in the sea or a swimming pool. Splashing water at one another.
He teaches her to do something. Play pool,
the reach
archery.
Around. The reach around.
Sorry, carry on.
You don't see him play her any hangman's joke, do you? Or...
Oh, that would be good if we saw her at his gig and she was like, that's my boyfriend.
Yeah.
Yeah,
their eyes lock while he's.
And he's like, "I wrote this for you, Shelley."
Or what you'd need is loads of other sort of young girls in front of her, like jumping up and down, going, "Look at me! Look
but
at
the
me!"
Camera's like,
but his eyes just on Shelley, and she's just standing there lit separately.
Yeah, and with a halo.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, perfect.
So, based on exactly what we're just talking about, even those moments wouldn't have quite done enough for me. I needed to see this relationship that he had with Shelley. Which is gonna, I'm bleeding into the verdict here, but I'm gonna say it now, because for me, this film suffers it's style over substance.
Oh my God, are you not gonna pick this film?
No, I didn't say that, but I'm getting to my verdict. Okay. It's a little bit style over substance, and I'll quite simply tell you for why. I'm a bit confused, because where I read it, I thought that part of the things he passed away with 3 days left to film on this movie. And I thought a lot of what they were doing were flashback stuff about his relationship with Shelley. I might be wrong. And I wondered whether there was going to be a little more development of that relationship. And unfortunately, they couldn't do that. Because I need to see that relationship. If I'm watching a movie about a guy looking for revenge because the death of his wife-to-be and himself, I need to understand that relationship and I need to see it in the film. And shaving foam fights don't do it for me. So I'm just left a little bit with a big hole about who Shelley is and this relationship and what he meant to her, because I never get to see them apart from some soft focus montages. So that's a bit of a problem for me. So I'd actually have at the start a bit more, like a 15 minute, this is Shelley and Eric's life before this horrible thing happens.
They could be doing like the housing petition together, but her pen runs out and he reaches around and he's like, let me. And then they
reach
write.
Around.
Wait, yeah. He's teaching her how to write. That seems offensive.
Yeah, to write and reach around.
That's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, dear. What about you? Have you done your change? No. Sorry. I'm losing.
Oh, you're not
grip.
Listening? How rude.
No, sorry.
How bloody rude.
Sorry.
Do you not think it's a bit rude to ask him if he's done his change or not?
Sorry.
Are you thinking about something else, kiddo?
Do you see yourself as Sarah or Shelley in this
well,
story?
Well, neither. That's the thing. There was no one Good. To identify with, because Shelley does fucking nothing apart from get Good. Killed. And Sarah isn't, you know, kids in films is difficult. They're
I'm getting,
always annoying.
I'm good, because I'm getting rid of Sarah right now. yeah, I do it. It's annoying that films of this era felt like you needed a kid to be knocking around with the hero.
Yeah.
And I think maybe it was for younger audiences to have a way in. But, you know, Dick Tracy did it as well in quite an annoying way. And
not just of this era. I mean, you just look at Alex Proyas's I, Robot. What is Shia LaBeouf doing in that movie? He does not need to be there. Well, even Constantine, Shia LaBeouf again, does not need to be there.
I've had Constantine written down. I was going to say that. But get rid of Sarah.
Okay.
My change is, I mean, I don't really like a voiceover, so I think you could get rid of the voiceover. But I'm saying that and it pains me because I do like it, but I know it's not quality and I know it's not. And I know it's a cop-out.
It's nice. It's nice to admit when you're wrong.
Yeah, I can just about manage that. So that's my change.
So I quite like the voiceover. I've only been devil's advocate.
You like a voiceover. I don't. I like one voiceover.
I didn't like it here because it was coming from a slightly annoying little girl, which just feels out of place to me in this very grown-up adult world.
I think I know now what I secretly wanted, which does not work at all, but I wanted a sidekick so that I would have someone to implant myself onto, to be a woman that he then had sex with. But then that sort of negates the whole thing. Like, if he cheats on his dead fiance within about 90 minutes, that doesn't work. But I wanted to see more of a romantic spark, and obviously that's not going to happen. So, but that's just wish fulfillment.
Well, there we go.
Yeah.
We done with The Crow?
Yes.
Any more for any more? Right then. Dark Man was Monday. We just went through The Crow. Let's see how this goes. It's time for the verdict.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
So, I pick the movies, which means I get to go last. I guess I'll start with the most obvious. Victoria, of Dark Man and the Crow, which movie gets your vote this week?
There's nothing that can beat this film. If you honestly, if you were like, what do you prefer, Ghostbusters or The Crow? If you caught me at the right moment, I mean, no, but do you know what I mean? Like, that's how highly I regard it, which I know is ridiculous.
Yeah, because Ghostbusters is your favourite film.
It's my favourite film. Absolutely. Do you know what? I feel sick. I just said that. Yeah. That's not right at all.
You don't mean that. I think this is what I'm saying. You bleed just fine for a ghost. You're letting things get a pass that don't deserve a pass, but all right.
Yep, it's The Crow.
It's The Crow. Chris Thrilly, tell me.
I'll start by saying I think these are both very silly films. I think The Crow, I think the tone is silly. I think the music's a bit silly. I think the names are silly. I think the characters are a bit silly. And yet because of not being able to separate it from the tragedy that happened, I find it hard to laugh at it when it is being funny. I think it looks great, but also I think it looks a bit like a new metal music video.
Cool.
So I'm conflicted there. And I think for Darkman, I think Darkman's a bit of a mess, really. As I said, the way the characters and the storylines connect is all weirdly arbitrary. And as we said, 12 goes at that script and it's still sort of all over the place, is problematic. But I think Darkman goes on a much more interesting journey because he actually goes on a journey. And because I don't feel major sadness and discomfort watching it, I'm going for Darkman.
Okay.
I'm going to stare at you.
You can stare at
me. I'm going to stare right at you.
So I have a few of the same points as Chris. I think The Crow is a beautiful looking film, and I think it's an incredible central performance from Brandon Lee. It is like, in terms of depth, a 90 minute music video. It doesn't get me at the start. It looks great. I don't understand enough about the villains. I don't understand enough about his relationship with Shelley to have it have an emotional effect on me outside the tragedy behind the film. I needed something more from it. As I said a moment ago, I needed a story that involved Eric and Shelley before the tragedy. That said, Dark Man is a bit ridiculous, but it does give me 15 minutes of Liam Neeson and Frances McDormand at the start. Darkman is a more nourishing film experience.
Don't do this. You don't have to do this.
And I didn't think I was going to.
Don't then.
But I prefer Darkman.
Knobheads.
In all honesty, and I'm not just being contrary, I just enjoyed it more. Like, at the end of it, I went, I've watched a movie as opposed to I've watched a long music video.
Right. I've got to shoot off. Yeah. So I quit. fuck it. What is the fucking point?
I'm sorry, V.
You're not sorry.
I can only be honest to myself. Darkman is my vote. Darkman wins this week.
Oh my God. This is the tension in this room. But I'm very pleased. I was worried there that a member of the pod was going to feel pressurised into making a decision. And I'm very pleased that didn't happen. That could have been the actual end of it all.
I'm not going to meet your eyes for the rest of the show, Victoria. I'm going to look at some notes, even though I've used them all.
Race to the end, Al. Race to the end.
So there we go. The winner this week, beating another movie, is Darkman. Darkman is the winner on this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. Christopher, tell us, what are we doing on next week's shows?
Vicky.
I won't be here, so. But go on.
You have The Crow too.
Yay!
City of Angels. I had that soundtrack.
Vicky, I'm giving you Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. And Alex, I'm giving you Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Very quickly, do you really love one of these movies, Victoria?
No, I like them both.
Okay, great. Cool. So it's going to be fine next week then.
We
can just...
We shall see.
It doesn't matter who wins. Right then, thank you very much for listening. I'm going to run. Bye-bye. Rating reviewers. See ya.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.